This is the Breaker.News podcast for the 10th of December, 2017. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions. Help stop the secrecy and unravel the spin. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me? Commentary. Around the Rim with headlines from New Zealand, South Korea, and China. Cascadia Calling with headlines from Washington and British Columbia. The Big Deal feature with Transparency International and the battle against corruption at home and abroad. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference this week. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did the BC Liberals really drop the ball on delivering law and order to British Columbia? First, murder and conspiracy charges were stayed against gangster Jamie Bacon by a BC Supreme Court judge. Justice Kathleen Kerr issued a vague ruling in favor of Bacon stemming from the Surrey 6 incident. Two innocent men, Chris Mohan and Ed Schellenberg, were killed in Surrey in 2007. They were at the wrong place at the wrong time. Bacon is also expected to apply for bail on a charge of counseling to commit murder from 2008. Attorney General David Eby said he was shocked and pledged to review the case for a potential appeal. In the same week, Eby also revealed how surprised he was that the government regulators were not on duty around the clock at Metro Vancouver casinos. They will be soon after the preliminary findings of UBC law professor Peter German. Said Eby, quote, "Everything about this file since I was briefed from day one by the public servants responsible for it has surprised me, and that's saying something, because I came into this as the critic responsible for gaming." End quote. River Rock Casino Resort, ground zero for money laundering in BC casinos, opened in 2004. But why didn't the BC Liberal government, under Gordon Campbell and later Christy Clark, ensure around-the-clock law enforcement? Meanwhile, British Columbians are treated to the tawdry spectacle of the BC Liberal leadership race, featuring five men who voted for Clark's clone speech and did nothing for law and order in BC. One of them is Mike De Jong, who was the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Gambling, and the Minister of Real Estate until the Liberals lost power last summer. The BC Liberals had no crime-fighting strategy. That was obvious when accused drug dealers walked free because there weren't enough sheriffs in the Victoria courthouse. Now British Columbians are paying the price. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First, in New Zealand, Eileen Goodwin of the Otago Daily Times reports, disgraced Waikato boss claimed DHB merger credit. Disgraced former health boss Nigel Murray is claiming the credit for merging the Otago and Southland health boards, despite the amalgamation happening after he had moved on. His claim that he merged Southland and Otago District Health Boards appeared in a now-removed resume document on Waikato District Health Board's website. Wellington lawyer Chris Garrett said that Dr. Murray, quote, stands by his statement in his CV, end quote. Dr. Murray resigned from his $500,000-a-year post in October amid an expenses scandal and was followed last month by Waikato chairman Bob Simcock. The Southern Boards merged on May 1, 2010, 2 years and 8 months after Dr. Murray left Southland for a role in Canada. Murray was the highest-paid health authority CEO in British Columbia in 2014, earning $444,000 a year at Fraser Health. In the Korea Times, Kim Hyo-jin reports that the IOC chief wants to visit North Korea for talks on the Olympics. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach wants to visit North Korea to encourage it to participate in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics in South Korea in February. Government officials reportedly said talks between the IOC and North Korea are underway to arrange Bach's visit to Pyongyang. If North Korea agrees, he could visit there this month. The officials said that the plan has been discussed in consultation with the South Korean government and could be interpreted as a positive sign that North Korea may participate in the Olympics. North Korea's figure skating pair Ryom Tae-ok and Jim Ju-sik the only North Korean team to have qualified for the 2018 Olympics, missed an October 30th deadline to register, but the door will still be open with Bok's potential offer. And finally, Stephen Chase and Nathan Vanderclip in the Globe and Mail report that Trudeau leaves China with a defense of Western media, but no progress on free trade. The Chinese government resisted the Liberal leader's attempt to impose Canadian-style labor and environment standards and gender rights through a trade pact. Trudeau also left China adamant that not only did he raise the plight of five imprisoned Canadians with senior Chinese leaders, but that he felt very strongly about the need to protect the rights of citizens traveling abroad. Those detained include Hussein Chalil, a Uyghur dissident who was imprisoned since 2006, Falun Gong practitioner Sun Qian, in jail since February, Chao Jianhua, a billionaire abducted to mainland China from Hong Kong, and British Columbia wine merchants John Chang and Allison Liu. The Richmond, BC couple has been detained since May 2016 over a customs dispute involving shipments of ice wine that Beijing says were undervalued for duty purposes. In China, however, the lack of an agreement to formalize trade talks pointed to frictions in the relationship as middleweight Canada seeks to push China into accepting Western norms on delicate issues such as workers' rights. That's Around the Rim for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling, where we look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Fox News reports that Darren Berg, Seattle's mini Madoff, escapes prison after bilking investors out of $100 million. The U.S. Marshals Service tightened its dragnet for a con man dubbed Seattle's mini Madoff after the 55-year-old escaped a federal prison where he was serving an 18-year sentence. Darren Berg, who was convicted of swindling investors out of more than $100 million, walked away from a minimum security work camp next to a penitentiary in Atwater, California, on December 6th. Darren Berg will be captured, held to account, and returned to federal custody, said Emily Langley, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Seattle. Berg was sentenced in 2012 for bamboozling his clients, many of whom were senior citizens, out of their life savings to fund a Ponzi scheme Berg was using to support his high-flying life. Berg pleaded guilty to wire fraud, money laundering, and bankruptcy fraud charges. He used investment funds from his company, Meridian Group, to buy two Learjets, several yachts, and million-dollar condos and homes in Washington State and California over the course of a decade. MTR Western, the luxury motor coach company that Berg owned, was a contractor for the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics Organizing Committee during the World Press Preview in 2008. In the Everett Herald, Ricky King reports that a judge temporarily blocks Everett's bikini barista dress code. U.S. District Court Judge Marsha Peckman banned Everett from enforcing a dress code for bikini baristas, at least for now. While some customers view the bikinis as sexualized, to others they convey particularized values, beliefs, ideas, and opinions, namely body confidence and freedom of choice, the judge said. She issued a 13-page preliminary injunction while the barista's lawsuit continues. They are seeking to have the rules permanently thrown out. Some terms in the city's ordinance are not well-defined or reasonably understandable, the judge said. The city decided earlier this year that workers in coffee shops and other quick-service restaurants must wear a minimum of a tank top and shorts. That bans the bikini business model, which has been associated in Snohomish County with prostitution and people linked to organized crime. The plaintiffs celebrated the news, saying that they felt vindicated. "Maybe they should think twice before taking away our rights," said barista Liberty Ziska in a press release. City officials said they were evaluating the ruling. And CFAX 1070's Sandy Hall reports that a man and dog find a human foot on Jordan River Beach on Vancouver Island. A man walking his dog on a Jordan River beach on December 7th got a shock when his pet discovered a human foot still in a shoe with part of a leg attached. The man contacted the Souk RCMP. Officers went to the scene along with an assistant coroner to recover the body part and conduct a search of the area. This discovery brings the number of human feet found since August 2007 to 17 in BC. Four have also been found in Washington State. The investigation has been turned over to the BC Coroner's Office. That's Cascadia Calling for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time for the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. This week, World Anti-Corruption Day was December the 9th, but we should be talking about this problem every day of the year. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says that corruption reduces efficiency and increases inequality. It costs the world economy a whopping $2.6 trillion a year. The Breaker spoke with James Cohen of Transparency International Canada. Toronto-based Cohen is the Director of Policy and Programs and was involved in the must-read 2016 report, No Reason to Hide, Unmasking the Anonymous Owners of Canadian Companies and Trusts. It is harder to get a library card in Canada than it is to register company or land.
We are a global organization with a secretariat in Berlin, and they put out a report reviewing beneficial ownership commitments, of which they found Canada was lacking, as well as the Financial Action Task Force, a global body on financial issues, both giving Canada bad reviews. And the Financial Action Task Force recommended that Canada make a priority of working on beneficial ownership. So those points were out there. And then what we did is, as real estate is a key issue, not only in Vancouver, but in Toronto, but as a pilot project, we decided to look at Vancouver and the real estate market there. We found around 50% of the top most luxury properties in Vancouver are behind opaque ownership systems with no knowledge of who the ultimate owners are.
But why is this important for Canadians?
So it's up to us and our partner organizations to keep reminding the finance ministers around Canada and the provinces, the territories, and the federal level that we are obliged by our G20 obligations to work on this. But as you point out, for the benefit of Canadians. Now, as you ask, why is this important to Canadians? This can often be a rather nebulous topic, and some people think it's only connected to tax havens overseas, but it is here in Canada. So one thing that came out of the Panama Papers over a year ago, there's still revelations coming from those, even as we have the new revelations in the Paradise Papers, is that intermediaries overseas, financial and legal intermediaries, were using Canada's almost pristine reputation. I mean, Canada ranks 9th out of 176 countries last year in TI's Corruption Perception Index, so we have a good reputation. And they're exploiting that reputation with the term snowwashing. It's actually found in documents that they're selling Canada to their clients to park their ill-gotten gains, whether through money laundering or tax evasion or even illicit finance flows or terrorist financing, to park it here, and your money will be cleaned like the pure white snow. So I don't think any Canadian wants that. No Canadian wants to know that our country is being used as a parking spot for dirty money. And we even heard circulating through the British Columbia press and even the national press now that Attorney General Eby's speech last week, he found out that the money laundering system in Vancouver is so bad through the casino system that amongst global intelligence communities, it's referred to as the Vancouver model. Now, beneficial ownership plays a part in that it allows for the anonymous ownership of property where there you can then park that dirty money after it's been moved around through the casino system. And then this, of course, has an impact directly. We might say this is bad for Canada's reputation. We're allowing for nefarious use of money. But really, what does it impact me beyond just reputation? Well, although there's a number of issues that relate to the skyrocketing real estate market and most of our metro centers, there can be shown to be an impact from beneficial ownership to skyrocketing housing prices as it becomes a destination for people to want to park money. Journal de Montréal earlier this year published a piece showing that West African officials are starting to move their money into Quebec as the European Union and France start to tackle beneficial ownership transparency. So we become the laggard in the global system, and the money starts to become more and more attractive to park it here. And it's not just about money coming into Canada's borders. It's being used here in Canada. Let's remember the Charbonneau Commission in Quebec revealed that beneficial ownership was being used for invoicing amongst contracting firms to rip off Quebec taxpayers. The RCMP has found that in, I think it's something about somewhere 40 to 60% of money laundering within Canada, criminal cases, do use anonymous ownership of businesses. So it's allowing criminal activity within Canada as well.
As we go into 2018, with more pressure because of the knowledge on our policymakers to actually enact the laws to go after those criminals and to prevent more damage to Canada and Canadians.
Yeah, exactly. So we're hopeful for a positive 2018 that, you know, we got announcements from the finance minister at the federal level. We're seeing movement in BC. Of course, governments, it's said that federal politics is the Canadian pastime. And so the bouncing between the federal government and the provincial government. But if we can see momentum in the provincial governments as well, then the federal government also needs to step up. We'd like them to not use that reasoning to not make progress. We'd like to see them make progress on beneficial ownership because of their obligations to the G20 system and because they realize that opaqueness in beneficial ownership is not to Canada's benefit. But hopefully there's momentum. There's more organizations going through. Canada's financial sector is also in favor of greater transparency on beneficial ownership because they don't want the burden to rest with them to do all due diligence on finances. Canada's law enforcement system is in favor of greater transparency so that they can do their work better. So we have more and more stakeholders in Canada, and more Canadians in general are finding out about the ramifications of the lack of transparency. And, you know, these terms like snow washing in the Vancouver model resonates with the average Canadian when this is a typically complex topic. So we hope to see much more progress in 2018.
So where can people find out more about Transparency International Canada?
Yeah, if people want to visit our website at www.transparencycanada.ca, they can download our report there, find out more information, follow us on Twitter at TI_Canada as we continue to make announcements, and follow us on Facebook.
That was James Cohen of Transparency International Canada on the Breaker.News podcast. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Good Samaritan Jake Taylor. The brave 21-year-old stood up for Noor Fidel, a teenage student, on Vancouver's SkyTrain on December 4th, to protect her from a man who allegedly assaulted her and threatened to kill her. Fidel, a Muslim who wears a hijab, was simply minding her own business while taking public transit. Taylor is a cook at a Gastown pub, and he stood up for a fellow citizen at her time of need. Transit police have filed charges against Pierre Belzan. Do you know someone or a group that deserves a virtual Nanaimo bar from The Breaker? Nominate someone today. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for another edition of the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. Email me at bob@thebreaker.news. Again, the email address is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.news on Facebook. Again, the Twitter handle is The Breaker News. The Facebook page is TheBreaker.news. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Have a safe and happy week.